Hello, so continuing with the saga of what happens if dark matter interacts with itself a little bit, what are the new and exciting complicated objects we can make, I'm going to be taking a dissipative dark sector and moving it from the present universe into an early matter-dominated era and asking what happens when we do this. And this is work that I'm finishing up with Leo and Aaron and Joe Bramante and two of the postdocs at Queen's University, Chris Capiello and Chinri Liu. Initially we just set out to ask, like, what if we had a matter-dominated era before Big Bang nucleosynthesis? And as long as we can return the universe back to being properly hot and radiation-dominated before Big Bang nucleosynthesis, there is a good amount of wiggle room to play with the physics in these early times. What we found when we introduced one of these dissipative dark models into the early universe is that we got a lot of interesting things. As we've shown, these dissipative dark models give us a new way to create compact objects, machos, dark stars, whatever you want to call them. But we also get a new fun way to make primordial black holes. And an interesting feature of this is that while we make the initial halos that will eventually turn into these objects at these super early times, the halos can take their time cooling. And so we can have objects that are collapsing into black holes or fragmenting into machos at late times, even in the present. A fun feature of this is that because we make pretty low mass black holes, you can have low mass black holes forming at late times, maybe even ones that can be decaying at late times. Additionally, while a lot of the models that involve dissipative dark sector in the present can't have that be all of the dark matter, as far as we can tell at these early times, this dark matter could be all of the dark matter. It's not all going to be in structures, but the thing that forms the structures can be all of the dark matter, and that's okay. And I think, as Sarah had said, the properties of the dark halos that we make is very much set by the properties of your dissipative dark matter model. So there's sort of, theoretically, there's a tidy way to make predictions. Realistically, it would probably require some simulation, but your end result should still very much be dictated by the physics of the self-interactions of the dark matter that you start with. So the basic ingredients that we were using, or that anyone should use if they wanted to have a dissipative dark sector dominating in the early universe, making dark structures, are the following. So first, we need a heavy dark particle of some sort because it has to become the dominant thing in the universe. By heavy, I mean it's got to be heavy enough that it is heavier than the temperature of the universe at BBN, so that this comes in and dominates at early times. In our case, we're borrowing Daniel's model, thank you, Daniel, of a dark electron. It's an asymmetric fermion. And in our case, we made it really heavy. It's got to be at least 10 to the 4 GeV. The next piece of the puzzle, or for our recipe, is some kind of interaction. We're trying to keep things really simple, so we have one dark photon that mediates the interactions between the dark electrons. We need this, because without this, our halos don't cool. We just have dark matter halos, and we have sort of standard collisionless dark matter. Nothing interesting or new happening there. In our case, this is a dark photon. It's, again, quite massive, where we're sort of cutting off the mass, assuming we don't want to mess with an effective or anything like that. It's not a dark photon in the normal dark matter sense. It's just a heavy vector that talks to our dark electrons. And then the final piece is an exit strategy. We've given ourselves this matter-dominated era of the universe. Left to its own devices, we'll never exit the matter-dominated era, so we need some kind of mechanism to get out. It's not actually particularly difficult to model build that. The option that we took for our work, and again, not the only option, is that there's some kind of scalar field which will undergo a phase transition. The phase transition is going to cause rapid expansion, which is going to dilute our dark electron. And then at the end of this expansion, our scalar field will decay back to the standard model radiation, and we return to standard cosmology, except we've got these little compact objects floating around. So this is the model that we're using, again, borrowed by Chang et al. It's just a dark fermion that's got a mass mx. It's a dark photon that's got a mass m gamma. And the strength of the interaction is mediated by this alpha. We're throwing this up there so you can see sort of what the parameters are. This is even simpler than Leo's model. This is sort of the simplest version of this that we can do. So there's no molecular physics. There's no atomic physics. There's just scattering to cool. And then the other sort of tricky piece I have to show you is this is sort of our model for the phase transition. This is the potential for the scalar field. What happens is, as the temperature of the universe is dropping, our scalar field was trapped in a false vacuum. Once it gets cool enough, it is free to transition into its correct vacuum. So this term gets small. And then eventually, the field decays back to the standard model. We repopulate. OK, the fun thing is that early matter domination is basically the same as normal matter domination. All the dynamics are pretty much the same, just smaller. So we've got perturbations that enter the horizon. As long as the gene's length is smaller than the length of the horizon, those perturbations can begin growing. They grow linearly with time, or with the expansion of the universe. Once they're about order one, large compared to the background density, these things can begin collapsing. This is all stolen from, you know, late universe evolution for matter over densities. Now, here's the unique part to our work, is that we need a phase transition, some sort of our exit strategy. So we've got our rapid expansion of the universe. It's going to dilute the background particles. It'll spread out our halos, but it shouldn't actually destroy the halos themselves, because they're overdense compared to the background. Now we're in standard cosmology again, except we've got these halos, and the halos have time to cool. Right now, for this, our only cooling channel is bremsstrahlung. So our dark electrons are radiating off dark photons. The whole halo is slowly cooling and collapsing. And now we have two end result options. So either the whole thing collapses into a black hole, or it breaks apart and fragments into not black holes. Those, at least, were the options that we were finding. It collapses to a black hole if cooling is a bit slower, and fragments when cooling is faster. OK, so using this approach, this is sort of our estimate for like the base unit size objects we would create. So here we've got the mass of our dark electron in GeV. On the side, it's the mass of our dark photon. And then these are the final fragment masses. Because we're working in early times, these are much smaller than what we were seeing before. And then we're showing you two different couplings just to give you a sense of how that affects the parameters. So you can see we get sort of a range of objects with masses from 10 to the 8 grams, all the way up to a bit more than a solar mass. This black line here and here, that's demarcating where we get black holes versus not. Oh, black holes versus not black holes. Outside of the black line, you have black holes. Inside the black line, we fragment and get little things. So really, we mostly get a lot of black holes. The other feature that I'll show you really quick is if we zoom in on each of these areas, this is the part of parameter space where we get fragments. And these are the length scales of the fragments that we make. They're still very compact. These would be like a dark white dwarf, in effect. And then this is for black holes. We've added these contours showing you about how long it would take them to cool and collapse what we expect into their final black hole form. And the fun feature is that you do get black holes collapsing in the present. If you want to have more black holes collapsing in the present, you can just reduce the coupling, and then that slows down cooling. So what I hope that you'll take away from this is that we can steal all of the tools that have been used for standard model stellar evolution. And once dark matter has any kind of self-interaction, you can stick them onto dark matter. We can have these things dominating before BBN. We get lots of interesting objects if we do. And that in this model, the size and features of our objects are pretty much dictated by the self-interactions and the properties of the dark matter that we're working with. OK, thank you.
questions.
Oh, there was one next to you.
So just to be clear, the species which dominates during the early matter domination, is this the dark matter or is this a different field?
So there's a few different ideas we've considered, but in this case, it's the dark matter. You could have a different field dominating as well.
So when the phase transition happens, the background dark matter decays away, but the halos remain. Is that right?
So everything gets diluted.
Because you have the dumping of entropy into the standard model.
Yeah. So the dark electrons are still there. The halos are still there. Our worry was that the halos would get blown apart, but they shouldn't get blown apart because they're over-dense compared to everything else. And we don't let the decay happen until after the halos form. That's the thing you have to wait for.
Okay. I'll talk to you after the talk because I think they do blow apart.
Okay. Yeah, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
Should I worry about Isaac compression here or not? Because it's
That I'm not sure of. I mean, I think that would be worth checking, though. And again, this isn't really the only way to do this. So we've also considered cases where you could have the dark particle is unstable when it's outside of dense structures, but it's stabilized inside of them. So then you could have it decay away and get us back to the standard model. We also considered a case where there's another heavy unstable particle that makes the initial halos. The dark matter forms dense clumps inside of that, and then your dominant dark thing decays away to the standard model. So there's a few different routes to do it, but we haven't checked that, so I think that would be worth looking at.
I think your perturbation spectrum is the same for everyone.
Yeah, so we assumed the same perturbation spectrum that people use at late times when we were getting these estimates. You could play with them a bit more. So we just assumed the average perturbation is 10 to the minus 5.
But that's really odd, right? And which scale, you will see you're enhancing the power spectrum.
I mean, at super low scales.
Yeah, super low scale, right? So, mm-hmm. I guess you're talking about seeing maybe these with a closer time array, or...
Oh, I mean, so these would be subject...
The scale, of course,
these would be subject to all the standard Macho constraints. So depending on the masses, well, for the primordial black hole, some of them would be decaying, so there's that. You've got lensing, you've got that these things would be forming binaries, so they're basically, these are primordial black holes at the end of the day. So they do a lot of the stuff that those do. And we can see them in sort of the same ways we look for those objects.
Could you say a little more about the possibility of forming objects that are actually decaying at late times?
So that was our favorite thing. We have to turn down the coupling quite a bit to get that to happen. But so if we turn down the coupling to like 10 to the minus 5 between our dark electron and our dark photon, then that does reduce the amount of parameter space where we have dark matter that's collisional and actually can cool. But you do get these windows where like sort of up in the corner where ineffective, which just means it takes more than the age of the universe to cool. That band is around, that like purpley band is around 10 to the 14 to 15 grams. And so that's where we start to see that there's a delay in the time that these objects would be decaying compared to like what you would expect for primordial black holes. So with a somewhat more inefficient cooling channel, I would say, you could make black holes that have delayed decay times, which would be interesting.
So some of that parameter space, I guess, is ruled out by the same observables as reporting black holes. Okay, but some are not.
Yeah. So the thing is, this, not all the dark matter lands in these compact halos, just like not all matter ends up in compact halos in our universe. So, an order one fraction would be in halos, something like this. But if you said, no, that's too much, you could always adjust when inflation, when the decay process starts, that breaks apart these halos or prevents more of them from forming, and then you could have a smaller fraction of your dark matter being in them, potentially.
I think it's just a bit like, I'm used to thinking of the evaporation gaps as being extremely, extremely stringent, right? Like,
yeah.
Tiny, tiny fractions to survive them. On the other hand, I don't know off the top of my head how much of that actually comes from early time probes, like UEN, which you guys are saving if you want them to play.
Yeah.
That is just mostly like,
yeah, but I mean, for like things that could actually be dark matter, I think it's just that we would have seen the gamma rays by now, and we didn't. This is more, it's like, oh, if you wanted to see a late time black hole decaying, you could also do that, and that would be fun.
Thanks, Melissa.